Good evening.
It's been ages, Josh. Where, Stephen, where have we all been these last weeks?
It has been a while, hasn't it?
I've missed you all.
No!
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? I think it was needed, though, I think. Just a bit of a breather.
But you know what? I'm sure the listeners will agree. We've had some great replays, haven't we, over the last few weeks? We've had some really great replays. So I'd say listeners haven't totally missed out. But it's always nice to come back and do a new, fresh show. So, Stephen, what sort of show we got ahead of this week?
This week, we've got a show that is going to be focusing on trans issues, trans rights, trans lives, and HIV, and how they all, you know, the issues that are being faced by trans people. And we've got a great interview with the wonderful, the one and only Rebecca Talon de Havilland. Mm-hmm. That's an interview that you and I did, wasn't it?
Sue? Yes. Mm-hmm. And we got the lovely Rory. He's done so much in the last year. Rory is based, he actually works at the Thames Higgins Trust in Brighton and Ship Street, and he works on a couple of projects, and Rory works on the trans project and also male sex workers project as well, and he does other work outside of THT. And it's not until I interviewed him I'd realised how much stuff he does, so that's a really interesting interview as well.
We've got apologies from Tony because he's got a new arrival, hasn't he?
So
he's,
yes, a little so puppet.
He's with us in spirit.
Yeah, he's his little baby puppy. Yes, I'm so jealous. He looks absolutely good. Puppet. So he'll be back on the show next time. So
puppet. Yeah, I think it's just that we've got, like I say, really a bit of community news that we're just talking about the trans pride. Going to be in Brighton 2021. Mm-hmm. The event is not going to be an in-person event. It's that's cancelled, unfortunately, but they're doing an online live stream on the 17th of July.
Right.
So that's something to put in your diaries.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's Trans Pride in Brighton.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And of course,
we've just got some good music, and
we've got some great music as always. And but just quickly before we carry on, how's everyone feeling? A year, and we're starting to come out of lockdown. How is everyone feeling about that individually?
How are you feeling?
Are you feeling a bit more liberated, Stephen? Now we're allowed to do a few things.
I'm hopeful, Sue. You know, I'm looking out and seeing it getting busier outside. And as much as I want to be out there, I'm still wary, but I am hopeful. Now mm-hmm. that everybody's getting vaccinated, and
yes,
hopefully it's all good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's interesting. Yeah. Everyone goes to the shops,
yes,
and the pubs.
Yes. Yes.
But it is good to get back to normal. It's good to get back to normal, isn't it? I mean, whatever normal is, but it's
exactly.
Fingers crossed we can just go forward from this, I think.
Yes.
How about you, Sue?
Yes, no, I am.
How
sort
do you
of
feel?
I'm feeling a bit, because I've got so used to working from home. I mean, I've got me all office set up, and I've got me tea tray set up. I've got, you know, my cat walks all over it, but that's another thing. I'm really, really set up, and, you know, I've got my blind behind me. I mean, and I'm thinking, do I want to go back into the office? But I know I will have to, but they've told me I can work from home for the foreseeable, but no, I'm glad. I'm going to have, it's having more options than what we did before, I suppose.
Yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. And I suppose if anyone's interested in coming on the show, because obviously we're back on the horse. You just contact us at hivhour@gmail.com. Oh, there's the Facebook pages at hivhour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Twitter page HIV_hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So and also our podcast, which is on Spotify, iTunes, and Deezer. So just type in HIV hour.
Mm. HIV hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news, and views on living positively with the virus.
Hi, everybody. If you've just tuned in to the HIVO on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online, we've got something special today on the HIVO. We've got the wonderful Rebecca Talon de Havilland. Rebecca is a trans woman and she's a massive advocate for trans rights. Hello, Rebecca. I hope I've introduced you correctly.
Absolutely. The name in itself is hard to get around, so there you go.
And just before we go any further, we've also got on the interview today, we've got the lovely Stephen Hart, who is one of the presenters on the HIVR. How are you, Stephen?
I'm doing good, so it's lovely to have Rebecca on, isn't it?
I know. So, Rebecca, I don't think there's enough time on the show to literally talk about you, yourself, your story, your journey, the work you've done, the work you do. So just give us a little insight of yourself there, Rebecca.
Okay. I suppose there is a lot to say. Basically, I am 62 going on 63. I'm a trans, post-op trans woman, so I've transitioned. I've been living with HIV, well, it's AIDS really, back in the day, from 1987. I found out I had this by when I was going for my gender reassignment operation, and it was compulsory to have an AIDS test done. And voila, I came back positive. So it rocked and changed my whole world. Up to that, I had been a hair and makeup artist and a model agent in Ireland. A very successful one at the time. And I lost kind of everything overnight through transitioning rather than HIV, because I didn't want to tell people I had that.
Okay, so just let's touch on some of the work that sort of empowered you to what you do now. I know there's so much stuff you do out there, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think it was in 2013, it was... when I was back living in Ireland and I'd reopened my model agency, I had written a book. I had my family back in my life and I'd run out of HIV medication. And I thought, I kind of like went into denial, complete denial. I thought, well, I'm really healthy. There's nothing wrong with me. Maybe it is all fiction. Maybe I don't have HIV, you know. Maybe I can let this go. You know what I mean? People are just have accepted me as the woman I am today. And I'm not having rotten apples thrown at me or anything. So why would I go down this route? I feel healthy. Okay, I've run out of meds, but so what? And within a year, I was getting very ill. I was getting very thin. I'm already slim anyway. So when people say to me, oh, you're so thin, and I used to think, oh, thank you so much. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. But then like my teeth started rotting. My nails were, I was losing my hair. And I put it down to everything else. I was getting nail extensions. I'd had hair extensions. I blamed everything but the elephant in the room. And then I got so ill that I couldn't breathe. And I went to my GP and he told me I had pneumonia. And I broke down there and then. And I told him, I then said to him, I think it's to do with my HIV. He said, what? And he jumped back. So I was rushed to hospital. I was kept in hospital for a month there. And at the time in Ireland, in the hospital that I was put in with sex workers and people that use drugs. Now, I've been both of those. I've done sex work and I've recovered from it. Mm-hmm. But that's how they treated HIV then. Mm-hmm. And because over the years I had built up this resistance to medication, they didn't have any meds that actually worked on me, that, you know, I was resistant to them all. So I was given 18 months to live. Now, that was my second death sentence in my life. The first one was when I was diagnosed first. I was given 2 years to live. And now in 2011, I'm being told I've 18 months to live. And at this stage, I kind of knew that they were telling the truth because I felt so bad. But I thought, I've got one more chance. I'm going to come back to London, check the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, was where I went all the time anyway, to get a second opinion. They did tell me I was very, very ill, but that there was a treatment coming out of America, I think specifically New York, that was working on people like me that had this resistance to the medication. There was only one snag. There's always a snag. And yes, the snag was that I had to be living in London. So I had to give up my everything again, come back and live here. And I was kind of living in a horrible accommodation, but I kept going. And I remember thinking to myself, it was one of those, I call it the road to Damascus moment, you know, where you think to yourself, I am the only person here that is actually suffering from this, you know, from my own ignorance, my own stigma. And I remember making a vow to myself that if I got undetectable again, that I would come out of the shadows and I would start talking about this, including my transgender. And I got undetectable Christmas 2015. At this stage, Terence Higgins Trust were doing this work positive program for people like me that were completely computer literate, you know, like, I mean, I used to have like a burner phone. And I think I had speed dial, was drug dealers and ex-boyfriends. That was it.
Oh, you know, my gosh, yes.
That was the height of it, you know. So for me to learn, and I remember actually having panic attacks in Terence Higgins Trust when I turned on a computer, it was that bad. And then I heard about Positive Voices. So I started doing kind of internship there. And then I went along one morning to this school and there was loads of kids there. And I was to hear this woman who was going to speak about having HIV, and she was a cis woman. I thought, I've met very few women with HIV. I had met some back in the 80s that never got a mention since then. You know, and I saw this woman of power, which is yourself, Sue.
Thank you.
You know, I saw this energy in you and the truth coming out of you. You were talking about your daughter, and I have a daughter, and I thought, oh my God, this is real. This is the real thing. I thought, how in the name of God could I do that? Because I, at that stage, I don't know when the last time I was ever honest. Do you know what I mean? Because I'd lived so many lies and so many, you know, and I thought I would give anything to do what you did. So I went back with Ben, was talking with Ben. I said, I have to tell, I knew that if I was going to do what you're doing, I had to be totally honest and transparent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're talking to kids in schools. They're going to ask you questions. You know, and as my granny always said, do you know what I mean? If you're going to be a liar, you have to have a very good memory. So tell the truth. So I rang my daughter and I told my daughter, and she said that she loved me and to go and shout it from the rooftops. And that's all I needed to hear. And the rest has really been history. But It was down to you, Sue, that and then I started talking about transgenderism. Then I became this activist.
yes, exactly. Stephen, what have we got to say to Rebecca so far?
Well, yeah, so Rebecca, I know, you know, you and I have been friends for a couple of years, so I know a lot of your story. And I know, as Sue said, this an hour-long show is nowhere near enough. But and I was going to ask you, Rebecca, so many people now are coming out and talking about their HIV status. And I never want to say it's easy for anybody, but I think for a lot of people now, it is easier than it was. But for you, Rebecca, you'd come out as a trans woman. Why was it so hard to come out as a trans woman living with HIV? What was the fear from it?
Very good question, Stephen. And you know what? My fear is not unfounded. You know, for the first year, 2 years, but let's say from probably about 2016 up to 2018, I felt like I can only ever refer to it almost like the fashion industry, because that's what I was involved in. I felt like this new face that they had found, do you know what I mean? And that everybody wanted to use me, and, you know, and I got all this and I was used for everything, and it was really empowering and my voice was being heard. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it came a stop, and this was before COVID, you know, and even when I see stuff that's going on in COVID, and my voice is not heard. And I suppose it really hurts me and it saddens me, because I did a big campaign with Gilead, and it was very public, and it's me saying I'm HIV. I posted on Facebook, and like all my, I've got a huge social media following on all my, you know, Instagram and everything. And I said, this is probably the bravest thing I've ever done. And thank God the comeback from it was really positive and good. But like, there were a lot of people could have come back at me that I had slept with over the years in my drug or drug filled, you know, all of this. I put my life on the line to come out and talk, and you just don't discard somebody aside. And that's how I feel. That's what I feel has happened. And I see other women talking about HIV on social media that would know me very well. And it's almost like they've had their, yeah. Do you know what? I feel more used sometimes in this than I've ever felt in anything else I've done. You know, but it doesn't, and also I feel even more vulnerable because I've outed myself in everything. Mm. In everything. And I just feel at times that's hardly there anymore, you know, and that hurts. Mm. That hurts.
Mm. Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb.
There was something else that you wanted to ask Rebecca as well, wasn't there, Stephen?
Yeah, Rebecca, I suppose it kind of leads on from that, you know. You know, me as a gay man with HIV, I have one view. Sue is a straight woman with HIV, she has another view. You know, obviously there's been, It's Sin has been out and everybody's been talking about this virus and how it affects the gay community. And, you know, I think as wonderful as It's a Sin was, there's been a lot of people left out. And as a trans woman living with HIV, Rebecca, do you feel what is the HIV community not talking about enough? You know, because you'll have a definite view on that, because, you know, I know that you are a talker and you're always willing to get out there and give everything you can to this. So what is it that we're not focusing on enough?
Another very good question. Everything really, and when it comes to not just trans women, it's women in general. And yes, and this is where kind of confusion comes in. If it comes in from me as a trans woman, then it must come in for cis people dealing with trans people. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, like long and short of it all is, you know, for me, and I can only speak for me, I was born in a wrong body. You know, I was asked in one talk, it must have been really difficult for you to become a woman. I said, I had to pretend to be a guy. I never had to pretend to be a girl. It's not my fault that whoever created me got bits and pieces wrong. I put them right. That's all I did. I am a woman. I had to transition into this, but I am a woman, first and foremost. I get treated as a woman, right? I get treated in society as a woman now because I pass in that sense. So why, as a trans woman, is my HIV not taken into consideration and respected? And respected in the fact that there are so many, I run a boot camp, trans boot camp. I work at 56 Dean Street now as a peer support worker. I'm dealing with trans people. And if you ask them about HIV, the first thing they'll go, no, 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 they don't want to test. Because they already feel they've got enough stigma dealing with this, being trans, and then you want to throw HIV into the equation. So we have to be able to teach these girls. And the sad thing of it all is that most trans girls, I'm not saying all, you must remember, I went from being a hair and makeup artist and model agent to being a prostitute on the streets in Soho. How did that happen? Because it was a trans woman. Do you know what I mean? And that's what's happening in the trans women community today, is that they have to do sex work. That's why I do boot camp, to get more out of trans women and for people to see that we're not in a margin here. We do, I used to say to the Irish Press, I had a sex change, not a brain transplant. You know, if you allow me be me, you're going to get a better version of me. My work is going to be better because I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be truthful. You're going to allow me to be me. That's the bit that gets to me, you know, and the amount of trans women, I could take you down when boot camp reopens, because I'm just doing Zoom camp. I'd love both of you to come along and ask any of the girls about HIV. It's like, you know, it's like watching your parents watching a sexy movie with you. Who's going to put the cat out or the dog out? if they just want to change that conversation.
Yeah.
We've got to make them empowered to get in, get on PrEP and all of this. But I need help with this.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see happening? I mean, we can only do so much ourselves, can't we, everybody?
Yeah.
What would you like to see other communities, government, not getting political, but what would you like to see happening to make things better?
I would like to see what happened in the 80s. You know, it's like, it's going back to It's a Sin. I have not watched that yet. I cannot watch that yet. My nieces and nephews have watched that and cried because they know that their auntie was one of those people in the 80s. They've cried at it. People understand I can't watch it. You know what I mean? And I'm all for it, but I don't think it's fair on gay people either that this HIV thing is always slam dunk at gay. Do you know what I mean? And then we wonder why cis people think, well, I couldn't get that. You ask most menopausal 40, 50-year-old women, that went right over their head. They were married, their kids, now their kids are in college, they're probably divorced, they're out, single life. And believe you me, us older women, we're quite hot. So we have a lot of young guys coming after us, you know what I mean? And everybody needs to be educated on it. What I would like to see is, for all communities, black, white, whatever, male, gay, lesbian, straight, trans, whatever, that we come together. Because as I always say, HIV is not fussy. It does not discriminate. It doesn't care who or what you are. That's the message we need to get out. Instead of us all going off into all these little communities, mm-hmm. or little things, why don't we come together? Like, I mean, pandemic now has shown, you know, you don't have to be any, you could be any rich, poor or indifferent, and you can get, you know, COVID.
Absolutely. And I think that's taught us all a lot.
Yeah.
I think absolutely, you know, with COVID affecting anyone. And I think that's how it should be seen, but it should be seen more that, you know, it can happen in any single community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, everyone's lives matters. Do you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
Everyone's lives matters. Do you know what I mean? I'm for the minorities are sadly women of colour or trans women. Do you know what I mean? That's sadly fact. Mm-hmm. So how do we change that? By merging together as one. Exactly. And it is like, you are not exempt from catching HIV, whoever you are. Get over yourself.
Absolutely. Stephen, how can you finish on that? I mean...
You know, Rebecca and I have, we've been talking for a long time about something that we're going to work on in a project. So there's, isn't it, Rebecca? There's so much that we can do, and putting our heads together is an amazing way to come up with ideas and come up with new campaigns and new projects and things. And as you say, it's so important, isn't it, just to realize that old way of saying it is that the virus is not fussy. It doesn't matter your body, your color, your creed, anything. It's a virus like COVID. It's a virus, mm-hmm. And it will affect anybody. So.
Go on. Sorry, your lasting words on this.
But my lasting words is to, like, I mean, just speaking with you as well, Sue. I mean, I would love, which I must do more of again, is positive voices, because when you're actually standing in some auditorium, in some kind of schoolroom, as you know, Sue, at 8:30 on a morning, and all these kids are sitting there and they're listening to your story, you know, that's where we need to kind of hit as well, is to bring communities together from the younger generations. We have some hope of bringing our generations together, but the real lasting hope is in the kids in the school. Because you know what?
Yeah.
My grandnephews, they just see Auntie Becky. They don't see who I was or who I went or whatever. They just see the person that they love. We need to get that out there.
That's exactly how it should be. Yeah. Rebecca, we're going to have to get you on again because the time isn't enough, but thank you so much. I know you're so busy with your campaign work and everything else, and we'll have to have her on again, won't we, Stephen?
Definitely. Well, Rebecca and I are filming a Heart Talks as well, so she's going to be on Heart Talks, so people will be able to catch a bit more of her on there.
Brilliant.
Rebecca, there's so much more we can do, so we will get on it, we will do it.
And thank you both, because you do a lot yourselves as well. Pat yourselves on the back too. We all need to work together.
We do. Thank you so much.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
If you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Out on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. We have the lovely Rory from the Terence Higgins Trust joining us today. And I'm going to let him introduce himself, and we're going to talk about some of the work that Rory does at the Terence Higgins Trust based in Brighton. Welcome, Rory. How are you?
Hi, Sue. Thank you for having me. I'm good, thank you.
I can see the sun shining behind you in sunny Brighton. You're based in Brighton, aren't you, Rory?
Yeah, I'm based in Brighton, and today I'm actually back at the THT offices on Arship Street.
Hooray!
First time back since Christmas.
Gosh, what's it like to be back in the office? I know we're going to be gradually getting back to whatever the normal is.
It's quiet, but it's nice, and it's lovely. Just the commute to work is something I've actually really missed. Mm. I have to say, though, my commute to work is a cycle along the seafront. So it's...
Hey! Just as nice, isn't it? I mean, goodness, you know. Absolutely. So Rory, let's talk about you. What's your role at the Terence Higgins Trust Brighton, and perhaps talk us through some of the work that you do?
Sure. So I'm a health promotion practitioner here at THT Brighton, and I'm part of the health promotion team. And as a team, we're all about supporting people to have good sexual wellness, to prevent transmission of HIV, to supply people with information and advice so they can make the best choices on their own circumstances on how to manage their sex life and how to manage sort of sexual health and behaviour around that. The work I do very specifically is I do a variety of different things. So I work on local campaigns to sort of spread those messages of health promotion. I run the Male Sex Workers Project called Protect. And I do a lot of development work around the trans community and giving them information and advice that's very specific to their needs. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I also work in our clinic doing HIV and STI testing. Wow. So I'm a bit of a jack of all trades when it comes to THT Brighton.
They're great trades. I mean, yes, Jack. I mean, when we say we are a jack of all trade, but those things you are doing are quite important and quite specific, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. And I really enjoy working. I really enjoy working in this office and the different people that come in through the doors, because everyone's different. Everyone's got a different story and different needs. And I really love working with people one-to-one and sort of seeing what support they need rather than assuming what it is that they need when they come through the doors. And and just sort of empowering people to kind of, you know, there's something about shame and stigma when it comes to do with HIV and sexual health.
Yeah.
That is so key to getting through health promotion messages, and I kind of, it's my own personal mission to do that in my own personal life. So I love helping other people work through the same sort of barriers to wellness.
And I think that's quite important when you've perhaps experienced certain things. I think we're apt to really give that empathy and that sort of really thorough information and support, isn't it? Especially of our own experiences, would you not say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I bring myself into the workplace and I try to be open about who I am without necessarily kind of, I don't want to be waving a flag about who I am all the time, but when it's pertinent, I do, you know, share my own experiences with people, because you can't really do these kind of jobs if you don't come in and be yourself and bring your own experiences, because for me, that's how I relate to other people, is I can kind of, well, I experienced this and you may be having something similar, and this is where we can meet in the middle and in a way learn from each other. But obviously I'm there to support someone, not the other way around. But.
Of course. And now you've done quite a good couple of pieces of work this year. You've done something in the Metro a couple of months ago.
And that's the, is that the free magazine in that, tell us exactly what the Metro is.
Metro is a newspaper, which I think is free these days, and you can usually pick them up on Brighton and Hove buses or the trains and places like that. So I think its main reach, as far as I understand, is London and the South East. I don't know if it goes a bit further, and perhaps it does. But yeah, so this past 12 months, me and a colleague within Terence Higgins Trust have been working on a very specific sexual health resource aimed at trans and non-binary people. Mm-hmm. Which we finally completed in, we completed writing the copy in October or November time, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And it got published with really good photo shoots and sort of printed flyers and a website just before Christmas in December. Mm-hmm. So as part of the campaign to advertise that and to sort of spread the message that this resource now existed, I wrote an op-ed piece for Metro talking about my own journey towards sexual health and why I'm passionate about sexual health and why I work for Terence Higgins Trust. And in very particular perspective of that as a trans person myself, how my trans identity has made access to sexual health services more challenging than it would be if I was cisgender. Because there is a certain, there's a lot of barriers in place because healthcare and our society in general is very gendered and in a very cisgendered way. Cisgender meaning that your gender identity is the same as the one you assigned at birth.
Sure.
The majority of people are cisgender, and it's a way of saying non-transgender and making it sort of an equal thing. And it was really exciting to see how much traction this article got, because a lot of people read it and found it really helpful to kind of to be signposted to this resource that we've made, but also to understand some of the issues that some trans people might be facing when it comes to accessing healthcare.
You obviously work with the THT with that as well, and you, weren't you part of a report that there was lack of good sexual health in the trans community?
Yeah, I mean, if you're part of the trans community, you kind of already know these things, because it's there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, and most people have experienced a lot of health inequalities when accessing healthcare.
Sure.
Whether that's just primary care seeing your GP, or whether it's going to a sexual health service, or if it's trying to access trans-specific healthcare. So about a year or so ago, the Terence Higgins Trust did a national survey of trans people and their experiences in sexual health and issues to do with HIV and HIV testing, and kind of confirmed everything we already knew, that there's a huge amount of health inequalities, there's a huge barriers to access to healthcare, and that the healthcare that is, if it's good quality, it's few and far between, and it's very patchy in general, the coverage in the UK. So it was good to kind of, it's always good to get the statistics together with these kind of things and to have the hard evidence, because with that you can then say, hang on a minute, we need to do something, give us some money to do it.
Exactly. But if you go, they say, look, we just want some money for this project, we'll say, well, yeah, so there's a lot of other people. If you go there with stats and statistics and surveys and things, I think we've got a bigger, a better chance, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, exactly. And this is it. The survey found that trans people were crying out for good, accurate information to help empower them to make the right choices when it comes to sexual health. And that was written with them in mind, and not sort of this very sort of top-down sort of way of speaking. A lot of literature you read is quite patronising, or it's written incorrectly. Or doesn't take into account trans people at all. So there was very much a need identified for information that was accessible and, and with trans people in mind.
Do you think we could be doing more? Do you think we are starting to do more? Do you think we could do more?
There's loads that needs to be done, to be honest with you. It's been interesting. I've been out as a trans person for 15 years or so. And in those 15 years, a lot have changed in terms of the public perception of trans people. And I'd say maybe about 5 or so years ago, there was this whole sort of trans tipping point where trans people kind of started to really come out of the shadows, and we were represented everywhere, particularly on film and TV. Mm. And you had big names like Laverne Cox and Caitlyn Jenner coming out and mm-hmm. being just world famous as trans people. And so that has started a conversation across the board about trans people and trans rights. It's also spawned some really ugly transphobia, particularly in the United Kingdom and in the press in particular, surrounding trans rights and specific bits of legislation about changing birth certificates.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has meant that we're talking more about trans people in healthcare. And when it comes to HIV, it's really noticeable how only a few years ago, there was barely any mention of trans people when it came to HIV. Mm-hmm. And I think it was as recent as 2017 that we started actually recording people's proper gender identity against their HIV status. Because mm-hmm. before that, we didn't know how many trans people had HIV.
Yes.
So the more that needs to be done is we need to make access to HIV and sexual health services more trans, including trans people, better. And mm-hmm. it's often it's the sort of the mundane details that are the huge barriers. So to give you an example, on our computer systems, whenever people walk into to our clinic, we have to log them as being male or female. And that may seem kind of quite normal to the majority of people, but mm-hmm. as a trans person, that sometimes can be a very tricky question. Mm-hmm. Even if your gender identity is quite what we'd say binary, so even if you strongly identified as being a man but you were trans,
mm-hmm.
that question throws up lots of questions, because it asks questions really like, well, are you making assumptions about what my body is like based on my gender identity?
Mm-hmm.
Because these are two different things. Mm. And in my own personal experiences, I will go to a clinic and they'll see me as a male patient, which is great. And then they'll talk about body parts that I just don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But to refer to me in anything other would be inappropriate. Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated thing, but it's these small details that really need sort of fixing. And then by doing that, you massively increase sort of trust and confidence, and then other things will follow with that, and hopefully other barriers to healthcare will come away.
Sure.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story. Radio Reverb.
Noticed in the censors we recently done, you're smiling, there was a change for the very first time in identity. What did you think of that? Was that enough? Could they have put a bit more on there? Because as before, they didn't, you know, it was just either male or female. There wasn't that information on. What did you think of that, Rory?
It's a funny thing, because it didn't surprise me that the transphobes came out with their pitchforks and said, you are raising sex. About a year or so ago, I actually took part in a consultation with the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, all about the census questions.
Okay.
About trans people. So I was really intrigued to see what questions they came back with.
Ah.
I think given the fact that we all get birth certificates saying that we're male or female, it's mm-hmm. fair enough that they keep the sex question.
Yeah.
What was really nice to see is in their original guidance, they said, when you're deciding how to answer, you can look at your birth certificate, your gender recognition certificate, or other legal documents such as your passport.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really nice touch, because mm-hmm. My passport and my birth certificate don't match up. They have different things on.
Sure.
And whereas most people's, they do match up. So with that guidance, it allowed me to answer that question how I would feel is correct, and also mm-hmm. how the state would see is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But the transphobes came out and said, no, you can't say passports, because that means that people can say what they want rather than... So it came to this just really ridiculous thing. It's just like, I live with my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He was person doing the census. I let him put down the correct answer, and I didn't have to worry about it. And there's no way on earth he's going to say anything other than who he sees me as, and that doesn't matter what the birth certificate says. So
sure.
I think the census is I think it's good they've asked questions about gender identity and sexuality. Mm-hmm. I think far too many people are getting a bit too worried about what trans people may or may not be writing on it, because mm-hmm. until you actually ask, I don't know, it's very complicated, but I think I would like to see there being more than male and female when it comes to sex. I think we need to include other variations of sex characteristics, include intersex people. Gender mm-hmm. identity should be not a voluntary question, but a question for everyone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's funny when we get to these things, well, you can answer this question if you want, because it's still kind of saying, well, it's those strange LGBT people that want to be different.
Yeah.
And until we do away with that, we're not really going to have equality in the census.
Sure. So, and of course, we've got to wait another 10 years, haven't we, Rory? And well, hey, let's hope some of those other things will be implemented in another 10 years. Let's see. But I mean, we do talk about mental, we are talking about mental health more than what we ever did. We've just been in lockdown for nearly a year, which seems like years and years to me. I don't know how you're feeling about it, you know. Okay, we've been able to go into the office a couple of times, but we've been predominantly being like everybody else. If you can't work out, you work from home and all of that sort of thing. How do you think the trans community, do you think the surge of mental health has been more impactful because of COVID and with what's going on and the situation? What's your initial take on that, Rory?
Well, I've not seen any statistics, so I can only just guess what the case is. As it stands pre-COVID, mental health in the trans community was pretty bad. And to give you a ballpark idea, that I'd say 80-85% of trans people would say they're experiencing anxiety and depression. Mm. Suicidal ideations, about 50% of trans people, with a further sort of 12 to 15% saying that they actually made an attempt on their life in the past year. Self-harm is really high, substance misuse really high. Mental health is a huge problem already, and the reasons for that is because of transphobia.
Yes.
There's nothing inherently disordered about being trans. It's living in a society that doesn't accept you is what the problem is. So and we also have high rates of isolation as well. So if you're in a city like Brighton and Hove or London, you've got a lot of trans community events to go to, and there's sort of a big community and family, but other parts of the country there isn't that, and there's a lot of isolation going on. So I think for some people it's been made a lot worse because of all of that, on top of the isolation that COVID's brought and the sort of the anxiety around ill health and all of that. So I think for some people it's got worse. But on the plus side, trans community have already been a lot online as it is. That's the way I think the community has really benefited through technology and social media in 20 years. So there's already a lot of support in this place. But I think for those that live in, maybe they live with their family and they're not able to be themselves at home, or they live in a house share and don't feel comfortable kind of sharing their queerness with their housemates, then that's going to make things a lot worse. And then on top of that, the kind of cancellation of events like Trans Pride, which is really beneficial.
I was just going to mention, Trans Pride,
I think it's made it really hard. From my own personal perspective, I don't spend a huge amount of time socialising with trans people.
No.
And that's for no other reason other than the fact of just, I just don't. There's, you know, I used to, but I think your life changes as you get older.
Of course.
But I found not being able to go to the gym has really impacted my mental health, because it's wrapped up with my sense of my body and my body image, which is wrapped up to do with my gender identity. So I think other people probably experiencing similar sort of issues, that isolation from their normal routine of how they would manage their mental health and their feelings of self and identity within society, when that's been disrupted, is going to have an impact on people. But, you know, I also run a group called TransCan Sport, which is a sports and fitness organisation for trans people.
Wow, okay.
It's based in Brighton and Hove. Mm-hmm. And since the start of the pandemic last year, we moved all our activities, which would ordinarily be face-to-face, online. We've been doing TransCan Sport online. Mm-hmm. And it's been things like that have been really good for the community, in that we've managed to stay together, doing stuff together and doing good and healthy and fitness-based. And so we were surveying our members recently saying, well, lockdown's beginning to ease. We're going to start thinking about doing in-person activities again. What do you want to do? And loads of people were saying, please keep it online.
Oh, really? Right. Okay.
People want to come out, but they still want to have that option that they don't have to leave the house, and they can still socialise and do physical activity.
Sure.
So...
Well, and I'm just keeping on that, because that seems really interesting. If anyone's interested in getting connected with that, how do they contact you, Rory?
Very, very simply. So for TransCan Sport, we've got a website, which is transcansport.com.
Oh, what?
Okay. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram, I think, but the website's the best go-to.
Great. Brilliant. Great. Uh-huh. And... testing. Now, obviously, the offers are going to be, do we have any dates when the offices are going to be running as they were? Do we have a timetable from Boris on when we can start doing things like we used to do in the office in Brighton, especially, you know, testing and what have you? Any information on that?
Well, I don't want to speak too soon, but the broad plan is that we want to be opening our clinic for testing, probably in line with when shops can open. And if you can go to Primark, then you can definitely come in for an HIV test.
That's right about the 12th, isn't it? 12th of April. Yeah. Yes. Not that I've got a date with Primark, but, you know, 12th of April. Right. Great.
Yeah, and so... we were open through the November lockdown for testing. And the way we were doing it back then was that prior to COVID, you could just walk in and get a test. But to make it COVID secure, people had to book appointments with us. Mm-hmm. Very simply, just phone us up and tell us when you want to come and we'll book you in. It's no biggie. You don't need to give your name and details if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And you get a time slot and come in. So we're COVID secure as much as you can be. So it's just one person at a time, and we have a sort of one-way system.
Sure.
So yes, and that's HIV testing, and you get your test results straight away. We also do syphilis testing and screening for STIs, gonorrhea and chlamydia. And obviously that's within the whole THT package. So you come in, you have a chat with us as well, if you talk about anything that's concerning you about your sexual health or anything to do with that, and we can give information, onward referrals, these kind of things.
And what's the contact for that? That's quite important. So if anyone wants to, they want to come in and even perhaps have a chat with you, make an appointment with you, or they want to come in for some testing, what is the contact, Rory?
So all our contact details for all our Brighton projects are on our website. And the shortened URL for that is very simply tht.org.uk/Brighton.
Right.
And that will take you to our page, and you've got the phone numbers for the health promotion team, our general office number, which would be the number to call for booking the clinic, as well as all of our other projects, so counselling, welfare advice, protect, you know, all of these.
Sure. Great, because that's one thing we always make sure, you know, because someone could be listening to the HIV for the very first time and may want to, wow, you know, Rory seems to know what's going on in Brighton. I want to, you know, and it's always important that we make sure that we sort of give that information. So, Rory, we could continue talking all afternoon, but I know you've just got back to work and you've got lots and lots to catch up. We really want to thank you on the HIV. It's been really informative, the information and some of the fantastic work you're doing in our brilliant city, Brighton, which is, you know, which is amazing. Trans Pride, are we going to go ahead this year?
Fingers crossed.
we're crossing everything, aren't we, Rory?
But, you know, even if we can't have a in-person event, if we can't have a big party in the park or even a parade and or a protest march, sure, we can still do Pride in other ways.
Of course.
So last year I was waving flags off of my balcony, and I fully intend to do the same again this year, regardless.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's just keep everything crossed, fingers crossed and what have you, and just hope that, you know, we will get back to, I hate using that word normality, but things, get back to things on how we used to do things. And I'm sure everyone out there listening is sort of, yeah, waving the flags as we're talking about it. And I just want to thank you again, Rory, and I hope we can get you on again as well.
I hope so. You're welcome. It's
nice. Thanks a lot, Rory.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm David, one of the volunteers at More to Me Than HIV. We are having an exhibition for World AIDS Day 2021. This is our second year of recruiting people to show their portraits and help show visibility of people living with HIV so we can break down stigma. If you'd like to know more, we'd love to hear from you. Have a look at our website at moretomethanhiv.life. We particularly welcome people from all the different communities affected by HIV, including queer, trans, intersex, and people of colour.
That was a wonderful show. Great to be back. And it's I hope our listeners enjoyed the show. And don't forget to tune in next time. And I hope you enjoy, I was going to say, your pints and your what have yous, but you know, not everyone drinks, do they? So that's, you know.
A pint of orange.
A pound of orange. It's just sitting outside there, not indoors yet.
I think layers are the key.
Yes.
Layers.
Yes.
Well, take care, everyone, and great to see you on Zoom and hear us.
Yeah, yes, and we'll be tuning in again next time. Okay, then. Yeah. Bye.
See you then. Bye.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.